You're listening to Cold OD Messianic Congregation's weekly podcast. Our services are every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. For more information, like us on Facebook or visit our website at coldod.org.
If you turn with me to John 21, please, John 21. Again, these cards, if you didn't get one, are in the back, but I hope we're going to be participating with a lot of different people at noontime. I'll be sharing a prayer, but a lot of people will be praying. And then at 7 in the evening, we're one of the, I know there's four churches, assemblies working with us at this location that we're going to do stuff together. Just an hour, can stay longer, I'm sure, but it's an hour that evening, prayer times throughout the city for National Day of Prayer. And and don't forget the mikveh, June 10th. If you haven't been immersed in water since your decision to follow the Lord, or your children have made a decision, we'll have a mikveh that day, June 10th. We'll go at 2:30 to Edwin Warner Park. So just let Fran know. Contact Fran at the office. So those are always amazing times, amazing visitations of the Lord. Praise the Lord. Messiah conference coming up. Maybe next week, Miranda, we can show a video of from the MJA next week, because I didn't realize they had one on their site. It's easy to, so we could do that. Yeshua's goal. What was Yeshua's goal for Peter? And what's his goal for you and I? I think this chapter talks about that. It says, after these things, Yeshua revealed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. In verse 1. So I hope you enjoy this story. I like this story. Do you like the stories of it? this story, it's just amazing after his resurrection. His visits, I think there are 12, we're not sure, but maybe 12 visits he had with to his disciples. And in between, who knows where he was? I mean, he could have been, who knows? We're not told. There's so much mystery surrounding it. But for those 40 some odd days before his ascension, visits with, his disciples after his resurrection. So how long after his resurrection did this encounter occur? Well, we know at least 9 days after, nine or more days after, according to chapter 20, verse 26, where were they when he had last appeared to them? Well, they were still in Jerusalem, it seems. Seems pretty clear that they were still in Yerushalayim. And if so, it would have been a three-day journey back to the Galilee. Back to Galilee or the Galilee. So, and we know that it took about 3 days back and forth. That's even the story of Hanukkah. We talk about that, why the oil had to last that miraculous time. It took that time to go back and forth to get new oil. But anyway, at least a week and a half later this occurred, and he told them that he'd see them back in the Galilee. He said that in Matthew 28, verses 7. If you want to turn there real quick, Matthew 28, verse 7 and 10, he says that. He said in this visit, he said, go quickly now and tell his disciples that he, this is the angel, that he had is risen from the dead, and behold, he's going before you to the Galilee, to the Galilee. There you will see him. See, I've told you. Again, in verse 10, Yeshua is speaking. He says, don't be afraid. Yeshua said to them, go tell my brothers to head for the Galilee, and there they will see me. Okay, so we know that. It's a rural, of course, less stressful environment. And think about it. It's quieter there. No locked doors, I don't think, from what we surmise. But most importantly, no religious, spiritual pressure, the intense pressure from hostile forces, religio-political forces, if you will, antagonistic to the good news of Yeshua that they had faced in Jerusalem. We all know what that is like, to be in hostile environments to the good news and then to be away from that. And so here they are back in the Galilee. Now, the number of disciples, verse 2, here seems to be seven listed anyway. Had Yeshua told them yet to spread the news of his resurrection? No, not yet. and this would not be an easy task. Why would anyone believe it? Why should anyone believe it? How would they convince them? Wouldn't it require a supernatural affirmation of the message through signs and wonders? Yes, it would. Otherwise, the announcement would seem like fake news. Have you heard that expression? False news, or at best, insubstantial and irrelevant news. That is why he told them to wait until they be clothed with power from on high. Luke 24, verse 49 says, we see it. It was not a message that could be communicated naturally, only through supernatural accompaniment. And that's so important as we think of sharing the good news. You know, sometimes we get all our plans together, we do all our things, but apart from prayer and the supernatural intervention, power of God in response to prayer, we can't expect the results that we really want, can we? So it's so dependent on that, on prayer, and on God's timing. And that's why he told them to wait till they be clothed. So not being sure yet of the broader meaning of these of the events of the past 1.5 or 2 weeks, the question was, for these disciples, what do we do now? Look at verse 3, John 21, 3. Simon Peter said to them, what did he say? I'm going fishing. Leader that he was, they said, we're coming with you too. Now, some talk a lot about this being sinful and, you know, he was going back. And there may be some idea that, going backwards in a sense of, but again, they weren't clear, I don't think, on what to do now. Not being commissioned yet, or simply, I think Peter was simply, they were simply being practical and responsible. Perhaps Peter thinks, I'm done. It was a nice ride. And they're not commissioned as of yet, and definitely not equipped to carry a radical, outrageous message. And that it was, to the entire globe. So what else were they to do? The excitement was over. Their leader was gone somewhere. Not sure, probably, you know, maybe where he was at this time. Though he was still, hadn't ascended, we know yet. But he was, they had returned to their home turf, back to life before Messiah, so to speak. He hadn't told them when he'd see them again there in the Galilee. But they needed to eat. They needed to make a living. So they went back, started fishing. Peter says, I'm going fishing. Needed to survive. But what a shift back to normal life. And Simon Peter personally must have been feeling horrible. He'd blown it. Disappointed himself, Yeshua, and his fellow soldiers. Maybe repeating the scene over and over again in his mind. Think about it. He couldn't go back and reverse it. I'm talking about his denying the Lord 3 times. Depressed, despairing maybe. What's next? He knew Yeshua was alive, that he'd risen. But what part could Simon Peter play now, since he was a failure? Had shown himself to be unreliable under pressure. Had gone from being the leader, the example, the tone setter, the one everyone looked up to and listened to being thought of as a coward in crisis. So continuing in verse 3, they said, we're going with you too. And they went out and got in the boat. And that night, they caught what? Nothing. They were tired. You can imagine how tired they were. Fishing's, throwing the net back and forth, throwing it, dragging it up, very heavy. They're hungry. Possibly depressed, boring. Look at verse 6. Well, let's read from verse 4. Yeshua on the beach, But they didn't know it was Yeshua. We'll mention about that later. Maybe there was a mist and a fog. We don't know. But Yeshua said to them, boys, don't happen to have any fish, do you? No, they answered him. He said to them, throw the net off the right side of the boat and you'll find some. So they threw the net and they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. Think about it. When he heard that, throw it off the right side. They could have been thinking, what? But when we obey the instructions of the Lord, even though it may seem foolish and arduous, we will have success. What a contrast to our own futile endeavors. Nothing, catching nothing, versus a great number. The difference between doing work without divine guidance and with divine guidance. Divine determination versus human. Maybe two of my favorite verses, and I'm sure likely many of us of your two favorite verses too. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord. Trust in Adonai. Literally toward the Lord, toward Adonai, with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, what does it say? In all your ways, acknowledge him. And the word yada, the root there in Hebrew, it's all your ways, know him. Know him. And he will make your paths straight. It goes on to say, don't be wise in your own eyes, apart from evil. So Peter, when this happens and they catch all these fish, after all that seeing nothing happen, therefore the disciple whom Yeshua loved in verse 7 said to Peter, it's the Lord. So John is the one that recognizes him, has the discernment. When Peter has the impulsive, the more impulsive one, the more, spontaneous. Peter heard that it was the Lord. He tied his outer garment around himself, for he was stripped down of work. He threw himself into the sea, but the other disciples came from the boat dragging the full net of fish. So this reminds them, this occurrence of a similar incident many months before. It's recorded in Luke chapter 5, where Yeshua told them to go out deep again, and they hadn't caught anything, and they caught a lot of fish. So this is a sign, this huge catch, along with the same, think about it, the same voice which had previously said in Luke 5, let down your nets for a catch. And that must have ignited Peter. So he heard it, and there's an adrenaline rush. Simon Peter was obviously not feeling condemned by Yeshua, or he wouldn't have been so impulsive and thrilled to race to see him. Think about it. No hesitation at all. And it says they were, verses 8, 6, and 11, dragging the net full of fish. So they threw the net, and they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. Those of you that know fishing a little bit, I don't know much about it. I've gone a few times deep sea fishing, and I've, few times the other one's really boring to me. The deep sea fishing was kind of fun, and I got seasick usually when I went as a kid. But anyway, but all of you, anyway, if you've been to Israel, you've gone out in the Sea of, on the Kinneret and the Sea of Galilee, you've seen Daniel Carmel, is it? Yeah, if you've gone with him and they show you how heavy the net was and you throw it and you bring it and how much work it is and how strong you have to be to do it. And so Simon Peter, it says, went aboard and hauled a net to the shore himself at this point, it looks like. There were 153 fish, many of them big, it says. So they were strong guys, boys, if you will. Yeshua says boys. Hauling a net full of fish, strenuous labor, and they had to be in decent shape to do it, I'm sure. So what are you doing to stay physically fit? What am I doing? What are we doing to stay? Find a way. Seriously, find a way that works for you. Find a way. Everyone has their own programs and sells their own, ideas. But find something that works for you to stay physically fit as well as spiritually fit, to be as you. It's good to be healthy. Listen, to be as fit as we can. So interesting in verse 9, if you notice, verse 9, that when they came out of the land, onto the land, they saw a charcoal fire. Look at this, what's to meet them. Charcoal fire with fish placed on it and bread. Wow. Yeshua is still serving them. Remember John 13, his example, his model of service. He prepares a fire, fish, and bread. By the way, it's common in Israel. If you eat breakfast in Israel, fish is a common part of a breakfast in Israel. Cold fish, but fish. not bacon and eggs. But do we love to serve? Or do we prefer to be served? Yeshua said, the Son of Man has come, speaking of himself, Ben Adam, Son of Man has come not to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. Now, 153 fish, the rest of my message, I would like to explain the meaning of that number, 153. I'm glad a few people are laughing at least, because I'm not. Because you can get your head dizzy trying to figure out. Now, I do think it has some sort of significance. I just don't know what it is. Don't tell me now. Don't try to tell me now. But you're welcome to email me your theory on the meaning of the 153. I did a little research on it and came up, saw a few things. Jerome states that Greek zoologists had recorded 153 different types of fish. And my response to that is, come on. I doubt it. but, you know, we can come up with all sorts of things. Numerically, I did, of course, check the Hebrew letters. I have it up there for you. Kanag is not a word. Keneg, kanag is not a Hebrew word. Best I could find out. You could say ken, do the first two letters of that, the kuf and the nun, and that means nest. And then gimel, numerically, means three. So you could say a nest of three or a third nest. I don't know what that means. Or if you take it backwards, which sometimes it's fun to do in Hebrew, take the 153 backwards and you could have gan and then kuf for 100, garden of 100. I don't know. Now, someone said, there's a record, someone has written that the Tetragrammaton, that's the name of God, the four-letter name of God, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, occurs 153 times in the book of Genesis. I didn't take the time to count them up. If you want to, you're welcome to. But but basically, you can grow very dizzy figuring it out. And so if someone wants to write a best-selling book on it and make a lot of money, maybe you'll cash in on it. All right. But I'm sure it has significance, or he wouldn't have said. I would think it would have some significance. But let's move on. Verse 12 and 4 say that none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" Isn't that amazing? Knowing it was the Lord. That's verse 12. And verse 4, remember, it says, "At dawn, Yeshua stood on the beach, but the disciples didn't know that it was Yeshua." Now, maybe because of the fog and the mist, and it's early, it's still maybe, still a little dark. I don't. But it's almost as if in verse 12 they were tempted to ask, but they didn't. So he obviously didn't look quite the same. What did he look like in his new body? Again, you can write a book and become a best-selling book on what he. No, I'm just. There's so much stuff in the Christian world that's like just like everyone's coming out with a book. So, but he was in a resurrection body. So it looked different. Now it's not, we know he's not yet ascended in his glorified body in the same sense that Revelation 1 does describe a picture, but I think that's obviously a very different picture. He's ascended and he's glorified, but he did look different and they weren't sure. They weren't sure. Now we look at verses 15 through 22. Ironside calls this the public restoration of the Apostle Peter. Harry Ironside, great commentator. He believes that Yeshua had privately restored him in an earlier visit, but here he did it publicly to restore confidence to the other disciples in Peter so that they could once again trust him. That's beautiful, isn't it? And so Yeshua says in verse 15, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than these?" What does he mean? More than these other disciples love me? Or more than these fish, more than eating fish? Or more than these, your, you know, the fish like your former job, because now you have a new job, not your, not you have a new job that I'm giving you? I think probably the first one. Peter had boasted earlier, though all fall away from you, Rabbi, though all fall away. In other words, all won't want to be associated with you due to the stigma attached. It's going to happen under pressure. Yet I'll never, he said, I'll never do it. I'll never fall away. Though everyone else does, I won't. In other words, I love you more than all these others do, implying that. Interesting, isn't it? How did Peter now feel when Yeshua asked him this? Simon, son of Jonah, son of John or Jonah, do you love me more? Do you really love me more than these others, if that's what he meant? And it could be translated, one Jewish commentary, Shimon ben Yonah, son of Jonah, maybe a reference to Simon Peter sharing in the nature and calling of Jonah the prophet. Now, Peter had denied Yeshua three times, and it's now given the opportunity to affirm his commitment to him three times. But at what point does Yeshua bring up Peter's failure? When did he call upon him to confess his sin? Guess what? He doesn't. He doesn't bring it up. Verses 16 and 17, he says, again, well, let's back in verse 15. He said, you love me more than these. Yes, Lord, he said, you know I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. He said to him, take care of my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Now, it's very interesting. Three times. There are two different words for love, as we know in Greek, and there's actually four different words, agapeo, phileo, storge, and eros, if I remember right. And in Hebrew, there's one word, ahava. Now, there's other words that we could say that have some kind of close meaning, but really one word for love, ahava. Let's say ahava. The two words that Yeshua uses here are agapeo and phileo. I realize I have them up on the board there. And keynote. And so, are the two words for love that Yeshua uses here, or that the writer records here, used for variety or for contrast? We can't be positive either way. We're unsure. But I don't think, personally, I think it was not for contrast, though most of the commentators, Christian commentaries, will say he did it. And I understand the difference. Agapeo means more like a God's love. Phileo means more like an affectionate love, like I'm fond of you, I care. But the other one is love that really gives itself. So some would draw the contrast, but I think that they were just used really for variety, because of the Hebrew word only being one, ahava, hava. Oh, I wrote it wrong. It's ahava. Sorry, just realized there. It should be an aleph in the beginning up there. Also, two different words used for are, because also two different words are used for to know in this passage, and to feed or to tend, two different words. Three times he asks him, because three times he had denied Yeshua. So this is the most important point I think I want you to get this morning. If you get this, please. He's redeeming his failure. He's undoing his disaster, reversing his depressing debacle, his flop. Peter, it says, was grieved because he said to him, verse 17, for a third time. He doesn't say he was grieved to him because he asked him, do you love me? He says, because he asked him a third time. It was painfully precise, but powerfully prescriptive, like painful surgery or extracting a tooth or filling a cavity or putting antiseptic on a wound. Yeshua is reversing his failure. Peter had denied him three times, even as Yeshua asks him a third time if he loves him. And it took this, listen, it took this to break him. He was now in a place where he could be used by God, emptied of self-confidence, totally dependent upon God's love, God's grace, God's power. Here are these verses that I give you to reinforce that theme. Philippians 3:3, for it is we who are the circumcision who worship by the Spirit of God, Ruach Elohim, and glory in Messiah Yeshua, and have not depended on the flesh. I guess I like the older translation. Have no confidence in the flesh. Same idea. We've not depended. No confidence in the flesh. Not dependent on the flesh. 2 Corinthians 3:5, not that we are competent in ourselves to consider anything as coming from ourselves, but our competence is from God. 2 Corinthians 4:7, but we have this treasure in jars of clay so that the surpassing greatness of the power may be from who? From God, right? Not from ourselves. This is what God's doing in Peter. 1 Corinthians 15, these are verses, of course, Paul the Apostle said. 1 Corinthians 15:9-10, Paul says, I'm the least, for I'm the least of the emissaries, unworthy to be called an emissary because I persecuted God's community. But by the grace of God, I am what I am. His grace toward me was not in vain. No, I worked harder than them all. I love it. Yet not I. Let's say that. Yet not I. Hey, you have nothing better to do. It's raining outside, so just, you know. This is much better. Eternal, God's eternal. Let's say, yet not I. Yet not I, but the grace of God that was with me. Let's say, but the grace of God that was with me. Isn't that beautiful? 1 Corinthians 15:10, Paul. It's no longer me. I've been crucified with the Messiah, yet I live. It's no longer I, but Messiah living in me. Galatians 2:20, you know. Ephesians 3:8, Paul says again, this favor was given to me, the very least of his kiddushim, of his saints, to proclaim to the Gentiles the endless riches of the Messiah. 1 Timothy 1:15, he came into the world, Messiah Yeshua, to save sinners, of whom I'm the worst. I'm the foremost. I'm the worst. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atonement for our sins. We love because he first loved. Oh, can you see how important that is? That's it. We love because he first loved. 1 John 4:10 and 19. That's the goal to which God must bring us. The revelation we must have in order for him to use us. Effectively, we must be broken of our own strength, our own self-confidence, and yield totally to his grace, his power towards us and through us. I hope you're getting something out of this today. I hope this helps you. Ask the Spirit to help you, because this is the kernel. This is the center of what God is all about doing in our lives. And listen to these verses from the Tanakh, from the prophets. These are so beautiful. Joel 2:25, I shall restore to you the years that the locust, the swarming locust, the cankerworm, and the caterpillar have eaten, are chewed up, are ravaged lives. My great army I sent among you. Hosea 2:17 or 15, depending on your translation, God says, I will give her back, speaking of Israel, I will give her back her vineyards from there and make the valley of Achor a door of hope. What was the valley of Achor? Valley of Achor was the valley of trouble, Joshua chapter 7, where I don't know, I have to look his name in Hebrew, Achan or Achan, I don't know what it is in Hebrew, I have to look it up, but he had hidden sin, he hidden a tent, and they were defeated because of his sin, and until they got rid of that sin, they couldn't succeed in their against the enemy. God says, I'll give you that. And so he called it a valley of trouble because they were defeated and they lost life. And he says, God says, I'll make it a door of hope, petach tikva, what that would be actually. And so she will respond there as in the days of her youth, as in the days she came up out of the land of Egypt. Isaiah 65:10, one more. Sharon will be a fold of flocks and the valley of Achor, a place for herds to lie down in for my people who seek me. How about that? God turns your valley of trouble, your valley of defeat and failure, he turns it into a place for the herds to lie down in, a place of rest for others. He turns the curse into a blessing in Deuteronomy 23:5. He gives us beauty for ashes in Isaiah 61, I think verse 3. J. Sidlow Baxter says, this was the Lord's heart-to-heart talk with Peter. Do you love me? Three times. Everything, he says, depended on the answer to that. Everything hinges on our answer to it. The first thing which makes a true spiritual leader or servant is not learning, not eloquence, not wisdom, not organizing ability, not pleasing personality, not even a passion for souls, he says, but a love passion for Yeshua himself. Nothing, nothing, nothing can take the place of that. All else without that is like withered flowers. Ahava, let's say it. Ahava, God's love. Again, I apologize for having the wrong vowel in there, the wrong consonant there. But our devotion to him is based on his for us. His for us. Now, he said, feed my lambs. Our service for the Lord flows out of our love for him. It has to work that way. And our love for him flows out of his love for us, responding, receiving his love for us. And so, I'll draw this to a close here, but in verses 18 and 19, you see what happened. He says, Yeshua has this conversation, says, when you were younger, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you grow old, you'll stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and carry you where you don't want to go. And this he said to indicate what type of death Peter was going to glorify God. And after this, Yeshua said to him, follow me. Agility versus weakness. Competency versus dependence. Freedom to navigate versus having to sacrifice that freedom. Being led contrary to my preference. It's not doing what you want to anymore, but and being independent. You have another master now. Yeshua is saying, you belong to me. George Mueller said, there was a day when I died to self, my opinions, preferences, tastes, and will, died to the world, its approval or censure, died to the approval or blame given of my brethren or friends. And since then, I have studied only to show myself approved unto God. Now, again, there are a lot of ideas on these things. Baxter says, he called this account three times a new ordination, reinstating him. But I question whether Peter was ever deordained or deinstated. I think Yeshua was rather reaffirming his confidence in him. For the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable, Romans 11:29. He had saved us and called us with a holy calling. He has. Not because of our deeds, but because of his own purpose and grace given us in Messiah Yeshua before time began. 2 Timothy 1:9. And he said to indicate course, many of us know that tradition tells us the death that Peter died. Whether this is true or not, I don't know, but it's recorded as just tradition, that when he was about to be crucified, he asked to be crucified upside down because he said, I'm unworthy to be killed in the same position as my Lord. It's not recorded in Scripture, of course. It's just tradition. I don't know. He's believed to have been martyred in Rome in the mid-60s CE. Yeshua said to him in verse 22, If I want him, because remember now Peter says, what about him? What about this guy? Yeshua says, if I want him to remain until I come, what's that to you? What's that to you? David Stern calls this curiosity regarding matters that do not concern us. No need for competition or comparison. I'm rephrasing a little bit. No need for competition or comparison of our lives, tasks, gifts, accomplishments, and calling with those of others. Yeshua said, you follow what? Me. Let's say it. You follow me. That's what he said. He said, don't worry. None of your business. I said before, my dad used to tell me that. I remember he was one who really didn't care what other people thought. He really did what would have his own convictions, and they were stronger. And he'd say, what if someone says this? And he says, ask you about this? He says, tell them it's none of their business. Father, we just thank you for your calling on our lives.